So I'm Joris Faraday indeed, and I'm working at the Utrecht University School of Economics. It's a way that I'm an economist, but I'm now also employed in Amsterdam at the Department of Criminology, so somehow you could now call me a criminologist. I don't know. No formal education in that, but for one project, for the new EU project, I've been appointed in Amsterdam now also. But this is only a part-time job, I would say. So mainly I'm an economist. And what I'm going to talk about is the effectiveness, basically what Colin asked me to do, to talk about the effectiveness of anti-money policy. But I also want to say something about efficiency, so I want to take into account the costs that Mike just mentioned, that we should also think about the cost of anti-money policy. I also want to say something about that. So let's start with the effectiveness of anti-money policy. Well, the effectiveness, quite clear, is the extent to which you reach the goal. So then the logical next question is, what is the goal of anti-money policy? And I've spoke with a lot of people that have to fight money laundering, especially within the EU. And I've asked them, what do you think is the main goal of anti-money laundering policy? And I tried to make a bit of a tech cloud, a bit of a new thing, I would say, on the internet. So the bigger the letters, the more often this has been said. So what we see is that still, you see a bit of the logical answers, the fight of money laundering, the reduction of money laundering or the prevention of money laundering, which are, of course, more or less the same thing. So we see these answers. We also see that some think, well, it's not only about money laundering, but also about crime. We see that some, well, specifically countries, talk about specific crimes, so tax evasion is clearly in the south of the EU more of a concern than maybe in the north. Fighting drugs is also mentioned sometimes. And we also see that some have as their main goal not to really do something, but just to comply with the international pressure that they get. So, which could be either the AML directive, which is now coming as the fourth directive, or the FATF 40 recommendations, which is also pushed by the flying circus that Peter's already mentioned. And, well, the problem is, if we don't know exactly what the goal is, then it might be quite hard to measure. We could say, okay, still most people talk about the fight of money laundering. Then we have the problem that we cannot measure money laundering. It's hidden in the economy or in society as a whole. The money launderers are not showing us what they're doing. And if even we have estimates on that, but we don't only need estimates on the amount of money laundering. What we also need is estimates on to what extent the money laundering is prevented. So we have to have estimates of hidden things that did not happen. I mean, I'm generally an optimistic guy, but I think here it might take a while for us to be able to really objectively measure the effectiveness of anti-money laundering policy. So then the question is, what else? Well, I see different options. What we could do is at least develop some indicators that show some results of a money laundering policy and track them over time. So we just see whether in terms of relative effectiveness, whether it at least goes up or down. Well, then you need a long time period, which we don't have yet. So there is one other alternative that I see, and that is do a comparative study. So compare countries and see whether certain indicators are higher or lower, which gets you into all kinds of other problems, which I might also touch upon. And this brings me to a research, so I always try to get the main question towards my own research. And this is a research I've done. This is a three-year research for the EU. So on the left, you see the EU report that we've delivered in February 2013. So most of the things I'll present were true at that time. They might have changed, especially the legal part is quite in development. As Peter's also said, on the money laundering definition, we constantly see changes there. And on the left, we see the book that we published based on the report, which we published last year. So that is what I'm going to talk about. So this is a comparative study on effectiveness. We try to look into effectiveness, and we try to do it for the 27 EU member states. So we try to compare these, but we quite quickly found out that these countries don't like to be compared. They don't want to be with these lists of rankings, who gets on top, who gets lowest. The FATF, the flying circus of the FATF, is already doing that a lot. And also Deloitte was parallel to our study doing that a lot. So they seem to be quite sick of this procedure. So it was always quite hard to really compare them and make rankings. But at least we try to show how the anti-monitoring policies look in Europe and what this really means. So yeah, we traveled around the EU. So if you ever want to know a good hotel in a major city in the EU, you could contact us. We've been to all the member states. Back then there were 27. Croatia is not included in our study. And we started always with a lot of online surveys. Then we went to the country and interviewed the people based on the survey and additional questions that we had. And then did what we call regional workshopping, where we presented the results to a group of countries in the hope that they would also correct each other. And that's also what happened. So we had some kind of check on what happened. And we did it along the whole regulatory framework. So we did a legal study on whether there were any problems. Melissa van den Broek was mainly involved in that, in terms of also the supervisory archetypes. How do they supervise the reporting duties? And, well, you touch upon all aspects of regulation, basically. I was mainly involved, well, I started my job as being the one, well, the economist, having to do the anti-monitoring statistics. And, well, as soon as you start to do that, you'll find out that you touch upon all the topics, basically. I mean, the gathering of statistics itself is quite boring. But when you start to interpret and try to make sense of the statistics, turns out that you really have to have a bit of knowledge about all these things. Maybe a good example is the 450 people working at the FIU in Lithuania that Peters mentioned. Apparently this is somewhere in the study. Someone collected statistics and wrote down that 450 people are working the FIU in Lithuania. Well, I must say they reported a similar statistic to me, but my question was then, are you sure? And then I started to explain to them what FIUs in Europe normally do, what their normal duties are, and then they explained to me that if you limit it to those duties, then there are only 10 people. So, and I don't know whether you sleep better now tonight, but in my report, my statistic is that there are only 10 people working in the FIU. They report the number for the Financial Crime Investigation Service, which has many other duties, and that's why the number gets blown up so much. What I also had to touch upon quite a lot is the definition of money laundering. It constantly changes. It's quite hard to, especially between the different countries, you see a lot of different money laundering definitions. So I suddenly went into a sort of legal study who figured and tried to make sense of these statistics. Also, what is the real root of the unit of measurement that we're trying to measure? And then we see that different countries are measuring completely different things, which say a lot about how comparative these statistics are, even though Europol nicely puts them next to each other in a column, as I also do, but I at least try to make this remark with it. I won't go over all of them. To present the whole book, it's going to be a way. We did it once. It took 3 hours in Brussels. I don't want to do that again, especially because it was a room without a window. I don't want to relive that experience, but I will quickly go to, I show you a bit of a statistical analysis, trying to show how different the different countries are and the different anti-monitoring frameworks, and that this might mean something in how to measure effectiveness. And then I want to go to the cost that Mike already touched upon, and look into the efficiency of the whole policy. So, well, yeah, we heard many comments about how bad the data is. Also, well, this morning Antoinette showed how diverse the and incomplete the statistics are. I tried to do a good job here and try to collect statistics. And what I wanted to do at the end with all the statistics is a cluster analysis. So I basically wanted to ask my computer to find out which countries are quite similar in terms of anti-monitoring policy. And of course, my computer doesn't know anything about anti-monitoring policy except what I tell him. So what I tried to give him was a database. So for a cluster analysis, you need data for all 27 EU member states. This creates a big problem. So these were basically the only data that were left. And I have these data for, well, I had to sometimes fill in some missing values, but these are more or less the data that are quite complete. So I have a full panel. And what I basically tell the computer, these are information about different countries. And now tell me, which countries look alike? That's basically the edit. So yeah, you can read in the book with the whole things about these statistics. But what you see, we have institutional factors like the supervision model, the type of monitoring definition, some more legal aspects, but also more the outcomes of anti-monitoring policy with cash declarations, prosecutions, convictions. And I take ratios just to prevent that. Well, otherwise my computer says, well, all these countries have very high numbers, so they look alike. But then you just get all the big countries in one group, so you have to take ratios. So I throw these statistics at my computer and ask my computer to define how close certain countries are. And I might be the only economist, so I might be the only one to understand what's happening here. But this is the result of such an analysis, which is called the dendrogram, which shows us which countries look alike and which countries don't. So what we see here, and the height of the line basically shows how different they are. So we see directly that the statistical analysis makes a big difference between these group of countries, which are basically the Eastern European countries, and the others. So this is the way this is done. And to make it a bit more visible, I plot them on a map. So what I basically see is four different types of AML policy, apparently. Just looking at statistics without really trying to put them in a box in any way. This is just the outcome of the statistical analysis. And, well, what I see is, for instance, this group of, well, green, I guess. Yeah, so mostly green countries, which are the Eastern European countries and Malta. So somehow Malta, in terms of statistics, gets fit in with Eastern Europe. And what I see in Eastern Europe, and the question then is how do we... What kind of topology is in here? What is it really showing? And what I see in Eastern Europe is that there are countries there that, well, they really changed their policies a lot. I mean, 25 years ago, some of them still had the communist law and really changed from east to west and have a lot of international regulations still on their table, being have the need to be implemented on all kinds of things, not only anti-monitoring policy, but on child labor, about food standards, whatever. So it seems that, and this is also an almost literal quote, that some of them have more copy-paste work than really meticulously working in the, in this case, the third anti-monitoring directive into their laws. So it could be that they more or less just put the laws, the international regulations, in their laws instead of really working it in. So that might be the reason why they show up to be quite similar. If they all copy-paste the same law and basically make the same choices, this might show up in the statistics. So another group of countries that we see are the yellow ones, which are the countries that are very heavily criticized by the FATF, mainly by the FATF, but in general there is quite some international pressure on these countries, mainly because they have not criminalized money laundering. And apparently this also shows up in the statistics. So their main challenge might be international pressure instead of the implementation itself. If you look at Austria, for instance, they really meticulously implemented the third anti-monitoring directive into their law. So they have a completely different challenge than the Eastern Europeans, I would say. Then we have a group of purple countries, which are mainly the big countries, which might have as the main challenge the domestic cooperation. We all know the differences between North and South Italy, for instance. Can be quite hard to cooperate with different institutions there. We know that France is a big country, but also has an island, Corsica, where the crime control might be quite different than the mainland, might be hard to cooperate with there. Well, we have the UK, which have most of the institutions split up by region. So we ended up with 28 supervisory institutions, for instance, just because every region, Wales, has its own supervisor for lawyers and, etc. So these might be the big countries where the main challenge is domestic cooperation and not so much the international pressure. So I see different challenges in different countries. And we have one group left, which is also the group that is geographically not so close. It's the Netherlands, Luxembourg and Cyprus. Those are the left outs, the fourth group, I would say. So here the grey countries. And there my analysis would be, well, these are countries that are rather small, with a very big money stream flowing through it. So through the Netherlands, through Luxembourg, and through Cyprus. Although they have a quite small economy themselves, they have a big amount of money flowing through it, or at least have businesses situated in their country they do a lot of business and therefore might do a lot of transactions, which creates a whole different challenge in terms of what needs to be done in terms of anti-money laundering policy. So, for instance, in Luxembourg, the head office of PayPal is situated in Luxembourg, which means that there are many, many transactions all over the world, and they are registered there. And because PayPal is their main office, they end up having a lot of reports about suspicious transactions or possible suspicious transactions. And they have so much at a certain point that they now just store them all on the hard disk and deliver them physically to the FIU at the end of the week instead of sending it every time they see something like that. And I mean, Luxembourg is a quite small country to cope with all this information maybe. So these countries might have a completely different challenge than the others. So if you would look for countries where you want to find out your best practice, you might want to look at countries that are quite similar to you. And also, if the challenges are completely different within Europe, then maybe we should also measure effectiveness a bit different here. And maybe the main framework that we need to fight money laundering might not be the FATF model, but might be a country-specific model. But let me go to the cost-benefit analysis, because I see that the time is running out. So I want to show you a bit on... because the EU also asked us to give a cost-benefit analysis on the policy. There are basically two ways to do a cost-benefit analysis. Or you look backwards, basically see how much cost did we make and how much money did we get from that. So the costs and benefits of the past. Or we could look forward and say, what if we stop now? How much money do we save?